This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I'm just a little confused because real Weezer fans know that they haven't had a good album since Pinkerton in 96.
Oh, wow. Uh-oh, looks like we have a purist in the house. Yeah. All right. I'm going to have fun with this.
The older character, the showman, who is the tempter in the whole thing, is the old Alice with the top hat and the makeup. And he's sort of the, you know, always there trying to get the little kid to join the circus.
When I first met Nigel, the first song I took to him that I wrote on my own was a song called Come Down, and he did a demo of it. He's really good in the studio and demoing it up.
Oh, you know what? You know what you sound like right now? Okay, hold on. Here's what you sound like. You sound like, oh, I'm stuck in 1994. High school's awesome. Why don't you grow the hell up? Listen to Ratitude. Listen to Pacific Daydream.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to a special podcast for the 1994 project, 1994 in Alternative and Rock. I am your co-host for the special, Jason Sherman, and joining me in this deep dive into 1994 rock is Andy Helene. What's going on, Andy?
Well, I'm kind of like trying to put my head back together because my mind is just blown about all the great albums that were released this year. It's just crazy when you stop to think about it.
It is so crazy. Yeah. Researching this list, I'm like leaving so many albums off, and it's kind of mind-blowing exactly how many significant albums came out from very significant artists. A lot of their first albums, too. It's kind of crazy when you really try to wrap your head around it. I mean, not only like what we'll be mentioning tonight, another member of PTB Nation, Steve Bennett, is going to do a special podcast alone on the four main grunge bands, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, and Alice in Chains, who all also had albums come out in 1994. So we're not even going to be mentioning those at all tonight. And when you think about how many albums we'll be mentioning and what he'll be talking about on top of our honorable mentions, it's kind of crazy how many significant rock alternative albums came out in 1994 alone.
Yeah, I think we're just kind of like scratching the surface even of
I know.
Music. I wanted to ask, though, before we get started, like, were you listening to music a lot back then, pretty heavily?
I would say I really got heavy into, because I was 1994, I was like 13. I think I turned 13 in late 94, so I was like 12, 13. I didn't really get into music until probably the next year. But, you know, like listening to the alternative station, they always play, you know, stuff from the previous year. So I'm pretty well versed into knowing all this stuff. I mean, I was watching MTV, you know, I heard about Kurt Cobain, I know all that stuff that happened that year, but I wasn't like, you know, buying my own albums yet that like in the next year. Actually, a few of the ones I'll be mentioning are part of the first batch of CDs I got. Actually, it was probably mid-94 I started getting CDs, but I don't think I was as into music until the next year when I was a little older.
I think I'm a little bit behind you because I turned 10 in 94. Mm-hmm. And really, like, I was still, like, music was just something that my parents had on in the car. And I really didn't listen to music a lot. I was more, like, still, like, Saturday morning cartoons. And then even, like, pro wrestling. Like, that's when that fandom took off for me.
It usually hits you in your very, very early teens when that happens. Yeah. I mean, I was born in 81, but I was born November 81, so I was like 12 for all of 94 until I turned 13. I was starting to get into music more and drift away from the cartoons, because I think by then all the cartoons I liked were done anyway. but you know, once you get like to that middle school, like 6th, 7th grade, that's when music really starts to hit you. As opposed to just something that like your older siblings would make you listen to while they were doing whatever. Because I remember, you know, being younger, like, ooh, Criss Cross is the greatest thing on earth. And looking back now, it's like, really? That was the greatest thing on earth? What were you thinking, 10-year-old Jason? You're crazy.
That was actually one of my first like CDs I ever got too, that Criss Cross.
Yeah, CD. Me too. Jumped. Yeah. I missed the bus. Come on, those were bangers. So what would you have for honorable mentions? I just missed the cut.
It's weird. I feel like the two that I have as honorable mentions, like, almost like blow away the albums that are on my actual list that I picked, because I was kind of I didn't want to seem like a total hipster, like picking these guys. I wanted to go with something more that was like maybe more sentimental to me as my five albums.
That makes sense.
My first honorable mention is Tom Petty's Wildflowers, because I really got into it within the last like 4 or 5 years, because some of my buddies are like huge Tom Petty fans. So it's more like I like it, but I don't have a deep connection to it. Another one that I picked is Johnny Cash's American Recordings, because that's another one that like I always... it was kind of a thing where I kind of knew about Johnny Cash, but I never really listened to him too much. I guess maybe like everybody else, the covers albums and stuff are kind of like the way, kind of like an introduction point to Johnny Cash. And
yeah, it's for a lot of people.
I think this was the first one that he did in 94. It was like a stripped down kind of acoustic thing. And he was on, I think, the American Recording label. So I guess it's just called American Recordings. And then he did American Volume 2. 3, 4, and so on.
These were, you mentioned something about covers, because I know he eventually covered something I'll be talking about later. Do you know when that came out?
Yeah, I think those covers that you're thinking of, and he did, I think he did U2, and he covered Personal Jesus, right? All those were like, early 2000s.
I should seek that.
Yeah.
I didn't know he covered that. That's interesting.
Yeah, he I think those were early 2000s, so it might have been like that American Volume 4 or Volume 3.
Okay.
Like, I'm not too much of a Johnny Cash, like...
I feel like I heard that.
I wanted to know
like,
all
of
his discography, but...
Mm-hmm. So some of the ones I have for honorable mentions, I actually have a few. The band Veruca Salt. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Super, super alternative girl group. I love Nina and Louise when they're together. The album American Thighs came out in 94, and the song Seether is one of those alternative rock songs that just always stuck with me. And I get to see them live years later, and they're so good live. If you ever get the chance, I don't know if they're still touring or even still together at this point, but if they ever do a reunion, go see them, because they put on a hell of a show. Also want to mention the Beastie Boys, Ill Communication. I kind of felt ill if I didn't mention that album, because so many people love the Beasties. Personal favorite of mine, I love Tori Amos. She released an album called Under the Pink this year.
Huh.
Live, Throwing Copper. A lot of people are probably going to think that's blasphemous. That's not going to be in my five albums that I mentioned, but it got edged out by everything else. And one that almost so close to making my list is a Bad Religion, Stranger Than Fiction. It's a seminal punk rock album from probably what some would consider the greatest punk rock band of all time. And if you're into punk at all, check out that album, because it's so good. So good.
Yeah, I feel kind of like weird. Like I even kind of considered Throwing Copper on my list too, but
yeah, you know, because I gave it another listen a few weeks ago, and outside of the singles and maybe a couple songs, I didn't love it as much as I used to. If that's kind of blasphemous saying that, but yeah, it is what it is. I'll be seeing them this summer though.
Yeah, is that the you just talked about that?
Yeah,
the
it's the
tour.
Ultimate Tour, ALTIMATE instead of Ultimate, but it's a live and another band I'll be mentioning later on. Spoiler: I don't want to spoil it. The 25th anniversary for their two albums with a special opening act, early piece. So it's pretty much like an alternative gem of a tour, and I'm so looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's one tour that I wanted to see, but there's just like so much stuff that it's... I wish I had more money to go to see everything.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I have to go because, you know, one of the two bands is my favorite, so... But we'll get into that in a little bit. So what do you want to start your list off with? What's your first one?
I'm going to start it with one guy. I actually saw him just live in concert. the other day. He was here. I'm from Peoria, Illinois, and he made a stop here on Sunday. It's Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper.
And the album that he put out this year in 94, it's not really like, it's probably like, it's kind of between periods where he had that comeback in the late 80s, early 90s, and like the Wayne's World appearance. And then he kind of had like a, I guess, like a resurgence in the early 2000s where he, I think he did some more like garage rock albums and stuff. But this one is like, it's kind of sandwiched in between there. It's called The Last Temptation, and it's like another concept album because he used to do a lot of concept albums when he first went solo. He hadn't done one until now. But I thought it was kind of a good one to kind of throw on my list because he has two songs on here co-written with Chris Cornell. So he's singing and doing backup vocals on there. So,
I didn't know that. I've actually seen Alice Cooper many times myself.
Oh, nice.
I actually got to see him. I want to say it was a, it wasn't a Friday the 13th, but it was very close. And he did a song. I don't know if you have any familiarity with me on these Place to Be podcast. I'm a big, huge Friday the 13th fan. And he did a couple songs for Friday the 13th Part 6. So when I saw him, I was so hoping to hear the song he did called Man Behind the Mask, but and he didn't do it. That was sad. But no, he puts on a hell of a show.
Sorry to nerd out right here, but he actually did that song, like I think 5 or 6 years ago on a tour. And I had tickets. It was like a tour where it was he teamed up with Marilyn Manson. And
I think it was, I remember that tour.
Yeah, and they came through here, but the buddy I was going to go with, he had a family emergency, and then I kind of wasn't feeling good, and I kind of wasn't feeling like going without my friend. But then I found out that he did the Man Behind the Mask on there, and I was like, crap.
Yeah, I feel like because I saw him at the Hard Rock in Universal, and I was like third row, and I want to say it was like Saturday the 14th. It was really close to Friday the 13th. So I really, really figured he'd be playing it. And just it didn't happen. But it was still a good show regardless. His guitar player, does he still use her?
How long ago did you see him? Was it?
I mean, 4 years ago, maybe.
Oh, it might be the same girl. Because now he's
the
got
blonde.
Nita Strauss.
Yeah.
Who she's like big into wrestling now, and she's
performed I've seen her a few times.
Yeah. He had another girl before that, Orianthi.
I know, I remember her too.
Yeah,
she
had
too.
Like real long like bleached hair, and then I think she's actually dating like Richie Sambora now, which is kind of weird.
Oh, interesting. No, I was really into Orianthi's solo album. Like I was super into it.
Yeah, it was different than I thought cuz I expected it to be more like a hard rock, but
it was more like kind of popish.
Yeah.
Like it reminded me of like Liz Phair, actually.
Yeah.
With like harder guitar. Still good. She like the guitar solos were ridiculous. Was there anything else you wanted to say about Teenage Frankenstein, Alice Cooper?
Another thing that's like kind of interesting about this album too is that he wrote some songs with was it Tommy Shaw and like Jack Blades? Like those guys were in like the Damn Yankees, and then
Damn Yankees. Oh, Ted Nugent.
And then before that, they had their own stuff like Styx and like Night Ranger. Yeah, those are their bands. But it's just kind of interesting how he's working with those guys who are known for like the almost you'd say like cheesy like rock ballads and stuff. But then he's got
high enough. Oh my goodness.
He's got songs in here with like Chris Cornell that are like harder rock, but they all kind of fit together.
Together.
On this album. So it's kind of like weird. It's like multifaceted or something.
So, interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of.
Yeah, I didn't know about the Chris Cornell thing. I wasn't able to listen to the full album the other day. I listened to about half of it. I don't think I heard Chris Cornell. That's probably later on in the album.
Yeah. If you listen to the first half, I think those two songs are towards the end.
Okay. Yeah, I did listen to the first half.
Yeah, it's like, I think Stolen Prayer and Unholy War are the two with Cornell.
I'll have to look into that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Huh. So the first one I'm going to talk about today 1994, not only was it a big year for alternative, but it was kind of like the break year for like mainstream punk. I mean, punk was always like around, you know, Clash, Sex Pistols, things like that. But mainstream, not really. Well, 1994 was a big introduction, like I mentioned, my honorable mentions of Bad Religion. The Offspring had been around for quite a while, but when they released Smash in April 1984, it blew them up. A lot of people probably know who The Offspring is. They've been around for, they're still around and still touring today. But the singles, you know, if you think about it, Gotta Get Away. A lot of wrestling fans remember the song Come Out and Play, as Raven used it in ECW for many, many years. And Self-Esteem, one of the biggest songs of 1994. A lot of people still, I still hear it if I turn on like classic rock. Oh, God, if you think about Offspring on classic rock radio, it makes me feel so old. It makes me feel so old. But, yeah, I heard Self-Esteem on the South Florida classic rock radio station like 2 days ago, and it just made me cringe. but, actually, my favorite song on the album, the album's called Smash, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that. The track name Smash on the album is my personal favorite Offspring song. Bad Habit, if you're ever angry at the world, listen to Bad Habit, because there's a very bad language laced portion of that song that's very cathartic to yell when he's singing it. But the album's super successful. 11 million copies were sold worldwide. It's kind of crazy when you think about Offspring. But yeah, it's a really good album. They're still putting out music today.
Yeah, and they're still touring too. Like, I saw them recently.
Yeah, I haven't seen them do any Florida dates recently. I saw them maybe 5 years ago, and it was such a good show. It was actually the 20th anniversary for Smash that I got to see live, where they played the whole album in full.
Oh, awesome.
So it was a really good show. Actually, Bad Religion, my honorable mention, opened for him too. So it was an awesome awesome throwback for punk rock, if you're into punk rock at all.
Yes and no. Like, maybe more the mainstream kind of punk.
Yeah, I mean, I consider Bad Religion mainstream because they've been around for... I think they've been around longer than I've been born. I'm not even joking. I think they've been around since like 1980. That's how long Bad Religion's been around. And like when I tell people, I remember telling people years ago that I saw Bad Religion open for Blink 182, and like pure like punk fans were like, "Oh, that's sickening." I'm like, well, it is what it is.
Yeah, like what we were saying about, or what we were talking about earlier. This was one album that, like, it was actually one of my first rock CDs, but I didn't get it until like 97, because it was kind of that thing where, how you said, usually in your like junior high years, you kind of is when you get really into music. So that's kind of a really good example of that, because I think I might have got it for my birthday in like seventh grade.
Okay.
So
like after I think I got it in 95 myself, but like after that, like when Ixnay on the Hombre came out in 97, like I got that the week it came out. Same thing with like Americana. So like after Smash, like I was a big into Offspring at the time. They changed a bit over the years. I think they've finally gotten back to what they were now.
Yeah.
There's a few years I was like, no, not a good choice, guys.
Oh, like the original Prankster stuff?
Oh, God, yeah. And, like, Hit That. I think that was another one. It was like, guys, no, let's not do this. Like, even, like, as popular as it was, I really wasn't a big fan of Pretty Fly for a White Guy either.
Yeah, like, I thought it was all right, but that, I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of annoying. Like, it gets old.
I love, off that album, though, I loved The Kids Aren't All Right.
Yeah,
that's a great song. That's a great song. So, what'd you have for what's your next one in your list?
My next pick is the prog rock band Dream Theater. They came out with their third album in 1994 called Awake, And I think every other band we've mentioned so far has been like an alternative mainstream band. These guys are like the complete opposite of that.
And I guess they had a really minor hit in like 91 off their second album. It was called, the song was Pull Me Under. So I guess it was a case where the record label was like, all right, we want you to have another hit and like recreate this success. So they kind of told him to kind of, they're like a prog rock band. They were more kind of like Rush and like Yes, with a lot of keyboards and guitar solos and stuff. But I guess the record label at the time wanted them to go a little bit more like harder rock or like metal because of like Pantera and like Metallica, Megadeth being really big at the time. So this album kind of stands out because it's kind of like, I like it because it's a lot harder than a lot of their other stuff. And it's more, I guess, concise. Like it's not as virtuoso as their other material. I guess it really didn't have any hits, so it kind of backfired.
That happens.
Yeah. One thing that was cool, like I didn't see the whole album live, but I think it was 5 years ago for the 20th anniversary. They were doing a tour where they played a lot of their current album, and then they kind of were wanting to hit the anniversary of that album. So they played the back half, which is the half of the album that, like, I love the most. Like, the last, like, five songs, they did that as kind of, like, their second half like of their homage set. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it was cool to hear some of those songs. And there was one that's the last song on the album. It was, like, their keyboard player, like, quit, like, right about the time the album was finished. And he, like, got some kind of weird like synthesizer song on there, and it's kind of like a thing where I don't want to compare it to Rob Zombie, but you know how he uses a lot of like movie quotes or in songs. Like this is kind of like that. It's called Space Dive Vest, and it's like really synthesizer-y, and then it's got like a bunch of like weird like dialogue like that. I don't know what it's from. It sounds like it's from a movie. And then the keyboard guy, he got that song on the album, and then he quit. And I guess the band was like, well, like, we never would have put this on the album had we known that he was going to leave. And so the really interesting thing is they never played it live until that 20th anniversary thing, and then they played it live. And I thought,
oh, wow.
They did it more of a full band version, too, instead of just all keyboard. So it was really unique to hear live.
That's interesting. It's really cool, like, if you get to see a band and they play a song live that they never play, but that you love, because a lot of the bands you go see, they have like a set list and they follow said set list for like a whole tour. And very rarely do they sway. I mean, there's rare examples like Dave Matthews, like there's a whole bunch of crazy, like changes his set list every day. Pearl Jam.
Oh yeah.
They'll have a different set list literally every show. But like even like a band I love like Bush, they'll change maybe a song or two every other day. But if you get to go see a band you love and you get to hear them play a song that you never hear, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was like or like the Man Behind the Mask, if they had done that.
Exactly. I know for example, there's a band I really like called Our Lady Peace. And there's a song I love called Annie off of Happiness. It's Not a Fish You Can Catch, an album that came out in 99. And they, I think, have literally played that song live like three times. So I know that I will never hear that song live. But I looked it up the other day and they did a show in like Atlanta. Like, oh, we haven't played the song in like 10 years, so we're going to try it tonight.
Oh, wow, that's cool. They were just going to, like, kind of, like, throw it on randomly?
Yeah. I was like, oh, that's weird. It's a great song, but I've fully accepted the fact that I will never see it live. And, like, my favorite Bush song, they haven't played live in 15 years. So, you know, it just happens. That's what happens. But if you ever get to that rare appearance of your favorite song live, you know, it's always cool to be able to be there to see it. Or even like to look it up on YouTube, you know. That's how I found that Our Lady Peace thing. Well, the next one I wanted to mention, it's from Nine Inch Nails, called "The Downward Spiral." This was I thought at the time, like I remember how popular Nine Inch Nails was, Everyone had the NIN shirt. It even made an appearance in Captain Marvel. But I look at like some of the in my research, I also looked up like how much these albums sold worldwide, and Downward Spiral only sold like almost 4 million copies worldwide, and that doesn't seem like a lot considering Smash from Offspring sold 11 million worldwide.
Really?
Wow, yeah.
That's weird.
I know. That's what I said. But I think the Downward Spiral is such an important album when it came out in 94. Trent Reznor, he's a bit of a musical genius, but he's also kind of crazy. So that makes her a very interesting combo whenever you like listen to his music. I think everyone knows the song Closer. It was very, very, very famously edited on MTV in 1994. But some of the other songs, March of the Pigs is great. And of course, you mentioned Johnny Cash earlier. He made the song popular again in very early 2000s with a cover of the song Hurt, which is one of my absolute favorite, not only Nine Inch Nails songs, but one of my favorite songs. I remember when I got the Downward Spiral when I was a kid, Hurt was the one song I like listened to on repeat because it's such a beautiful, haunting song that I would recommend anyone listening to. Some other songs on there that were not singles. Ruiner is a good song. Hearsay is another good song, and the title track for the album, The Downward Spiral. The Downward Spiral song itself, it's like a remix version with like snippets of every song on the album, which is a very interesting way to listen to it. If you just want a sampler of what Nine Inch Nails' The Downward Spiral is all about. Trent Reznor is like famous for doing nothing but remixes. I think he has more remix albums than he does like actual original content.
Yeah, because I remember like getting some like expanded version thing, and there was just it was basically all like remixes.
Oh yeah, I remember I got he did a song in a soundtrack years later called The Perfect Drug, and I remember buying the CD single for The Perfect Drug because I didn't want the whole soundtrack, and it was like The Perfect Drug, and there was like 7 remixes of The Perfect Drug on the single. That's just what Trent Reznor likes messing around with a lot of stuff. And I can understand how Nine Inch Nails may not be a lot of people's cup of tea, because it's very... It sometimes can be hard to listen to. But he's very much a musical genius. He's actually gotten into doing a lot of scores now. So if you ever see the movie, most famously, the one he probably did that most people would know, the movie The Social Network, he did, along with his score partner, they did the complete score to the movie. So when you like listen to it, it's kind of like listening to like a Nine Inch Nails album, like on light, like a Starbucks version of a Nine Inch Nails album. You can tell it's like you can tell it's Trent Reznor, but it's not like, you know, super super heavy. But you can tell, like, you can definitely hear the Nine Inch Nails influence when you watch these movies and hear the score. Actually, I can listen to the Social Network score just because it's beautiful music. Do you have any were you into Nine Inch Nails at all?
Yeah, like this one always is kind of one I'll usually kind of not really hit as much, but maybe it's one that I should hit like more, because I always seem to go with the first
Pretty album. Hate Machine?
Yeah, or God, I can't even think of the title now. The one with the blue cover.
Fragile? With Teeth.
With Teeth, yeah. And that's got Dave Grohl drumming on there.
Uh-huh. Well, the Fragile's really good, too. Yeah. That's when they came out when I was in high school. And I remember that being a huge deal when that came out. It was like a double disc album. He did the song with Marilyn Manson on that one, too.
Yeah.
But that was a big deal. I actually got to see that. One of my favorite concerts of all time. I want to say it was 5 years ago, maybe. It was Soundgarden and Nine Inch Nails on one bill.
Ooh, man.
Yeah, that was a great show. I got a story to tell off air about that. I don't think I should say it on air, but story off air, I should tell you about that concert. It's really funny.
Yeah, I think the one that I listen to the most, though, is that With Teeth. because I like the song Only and then Getting Smaller.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Both good. Yeah, that I've been on a bit of a Nine Inch Nails kick recently because I've had a lot of anger and it's helping me deal with my anger. So I've been on a huge Nine Inch Nails kick as of late. That's really kind of why I wanted to discuss this one in this project, because it's such a seminal album that came out in 1994. And their performance at Woodstock that year was ridiculous.
Oh, they're covered in mud?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Such a great album. So I figured now would be a good time to take a break. And when you come back, you're about to hear JT and Chad. And we come back, and we'll talk about the rest of 1994 albums. What do you think, Andy?
Sounds great.
Come back and do that?
Yep.
Cool.
Sounds great.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. And we want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Megadeth, Euthanasia, the new album.
I'm doing you a favor as I'm taking all your money. I guess I shouldn't feel sorry, but I don't even trust me. My thinking is derailed, I'm tied up to the tracks. The train of consequences, there ain't no time to
Euthanasia, the new album from Megadeth, out now.
Place to Be Nation, we are back here at our look at music from 1994 in the rock and alternative world. My name is Andy. I'm here with Jason Sherman. And there's a lot going on the Place to Be Nation right now, especially the pop feed. The Sarcastic Four continue their look at 1971 with the second of their three-part episode of Marvel Age. On the 30th episode of Songs with Friends, Steve and Kelly pay tribute to 1994. The hard-traveling fanboys continue Spider-Man Month with their review of the latest MCU film, Spider-Man Far From Home. DC For You continues its celebration of Superman with a look at the classic Alan Moore, Kurt Swan story, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. Geek and Sassy welcomes my favorite member of the Place to Be Nation, Tim Cable, to recap Season 2 and preview Season 3 of Stranger Things.
Hold on real quick. Are you a Stranger Things fan yourself?
Yes, I am.
Did you do Season 3 yet?
Yeah, I wasn't going to try to binge watch it, but then I got through it in like 4 days.
Yeah, me too. Oof. Yeah. Oof, that was brutal. Okay, continue.
Join Glenn and Scott as they run down all of the candidates in the coming presidential election in a new spectacular. On a new episode of NBA Team, Adam Murray and Andrew Reich are here to reflect on what has been quite the last week in NBA land. Then, last but not least, the greatest song of the 80s tournament continues. There will be 6 polls a day posted for round 1. You can get in on the action on Facebook by searching PTBN's greatest song of the 80s tournament and liking the page. Be sure to weigh in.
So over at the PTBN Wrestling feed, in the 11th episode of Row and Seat One, Ben chats Evolve, Ring of Honor, and more with indie star Kurt Stallion. On episode 130 of the main event, Scott, Nate, and Steve are joined by Sheriff Pete Schirmacher to talk New Japan Pro Wrestling, G1 Climax, AEW, Impact, Evolve, and much more. Tim, Jenny, and Greg are back with a brand new talk in WCW as they look at probably the greatest of the gimmick matches, War Games. Big fan of War Games. I haven't gotten a chance to listen to that yet, but I'm looking forward to. JT and Chad open up the 1996 pay-per-view year with a look at the Royal Rumble on the latest Wrestling Warzone. PTB and staff members Jennifer Smith, Drew Wardlaw, and Matt Souza gathered to break down the 1986 Crockett Cup. Now over at PlaceToBeNation.com, PTBN's tribute to 1994 is off and running, with this podcast included, with pieces on the Best Picture nominees for the 66th Academy Awards, the 1994 Stanley Cup, the miniseries The Stand, and actually Jambalaya Jake just did a piece on Woodstock 94 that came out Friday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't got a chance to read that yet, but I will be in the next coming days. Also, Excellent Adventure Team is back with a look at ACW One Night Stand 2006. Check out our social media pages and message board at www.bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in on the conversation today and start researching your list. But yeah, a lot going on over at Place to Be Nation, as usual.
I kind of feel like some of my picks on stuff like that are like
obscure.
So far off, like the, yeah, like obscure.
It happens.
Yeah.
I want to jump back in with your list.
Sure. So this is my third pick from 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of bummed out in a way because I had a chance to see this album is going to be performed live. It was going to be performed live on Halloween night in Denver, but the tour got canceled because Dave Mustaine, he was diagnosed with throat cancer, so they canceled their dates. Yeah, which is kind of like, it sounds selfish of me to say, oh man, I'm bummed out because I'm not going to get to see him on tour, but it's just such a bummer because the album is Megadeth's Euthanasia, and I guess they're just having a bad year because they were supposed to be on Ozzy's summer tour opening up, but then Ozzy had some health issues, and I think he aggravated his like shoulder, so he's just recuperating the rest of the year. So he like postponed all of his summer dates for next summer, and then they announced a bunch of Megadeth like solo dates, like random stuff. Like they were just gonna play Euthanasia like one night, and then they were doing like even the Illinois State Fair, and they were doing some like random stuff, like it wasn't a full like a fall tour or whatever.
Yeah,
but then those got canceled now completely because of Dave Mustaine's cancer.
That's crazy.
But
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, so sorry to come back in with a big bummer on our podcast, but
wow.
But this album is like, it's actually my favorite Megadeth album. I know that probably sounds weird because so many people's like favorite Megadeth songs or albums are like the really thrashy stuff in the 80s, you know, like Rust in Peace and like Peace Sells and stuff. But this one's like my favorite album of theirs because it's just, I guess it's not like they stripped down their sound, but they went maybe a little bit more mainstream. You know, people would probably say, oh, they sold out. But it just sounds like it's like really straight up hard rock, and it's just really good. Like, it's something I listen to all the time at the gym. Like, I'm always going with Megadeth. But the rest of the album, it's like they had a couple hits. I think A Tout Le Monde that they still do live, and then another song that they kind of play from the sound from time to time is like Train of Consequences. But then there's one that my friend Kurt, I was kind of getting into Megadeth later because this is one I didn't like. I wasn't into them at the time, but when I kind of was getting into them in the earlier 2000s, my friends like, check out this song called Elysian Fields, and it's really good. It's got, like, I think a couple of songs on this album actually have harmonica in there.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that's one of them.
I'm not super familiar with Megadeth. That's a little on the heavier side for me personally.
Yeah.
Like, my bread and butter is, like, 94, like, 1994 alternative rock. Like, Nine Inch Nails is, like, about as heavy as I'll normally go. That's, like, heavy for me. So I'm not super familiar with a lot of Megadeth. Like, most of the Megadeth I would know, I think, was on, like, one of the WWE games a few years ago.
Oh, probably, like, Symphony of Destruction.
That's exactly the song I'm talking about. Yeah. But I'm familiar. I mean, of course, I know of them. I know who they are. I know their history. Mustaine used to be in Metallica, right? At one point?
Yeah, he was. I don't think he was an original member, but he was there, like, I guess. He still got songwriting credits on their first two albums, Kill 'Em All and Ride the Lightning, which is kind of crazy because he probably doesn't have to even do anything with Megadeth. And he still make a ton of money just from royalties on that alone.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because, all those kids stealing Metallica's music in the late 90s, early 2000s, really hurt them financially. But, yeah, no. That's crazy about him having cancer. That's terrible.
Yeah, like, it
sucks. I had no idea.
But it just seems so weird because it's always, like, it kind of, like, seemed almost like ironic because, like, I think Tony Iommi had some kind of cancer that affected his hands, and he's a guitar player, and then Dave Mustaine, he's like a singer, and he's got throat cancer. So it always is like,
it's almost like
whatever you do, it's like, that's where you get cancer. And even like, I don't know if you're familiar with Mr. Big, but their drummer.
Yes.
Their drummer, he was diagnosed with, like, Parkinson's disease, so he had to, like, quit the band because he couldn't drum anymore.
Do you remember VH1, well, back in the day, did a movie on the band Def Leppard?
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember it was the scene when the drummer, like, crashed his car, and he was told he has to, like, amputate his arm. And I remember he was telling the doctor, like, but doctor, I'm a drummer. How can I be a drummer with one arm? So it's kind of like that, not to make light of cancer or anything, but that's kind of reminiscent, like, of, like, but, you know, he still does it, which is crazy. But yeah, that's terrible.
It sounded like they may have caught it early enough because he said that he's expected to make a full, like, recovery. So
good.
So that's good.
How long ago was this that he announced this?
They literally, like, announced that Halloween show where they were going to be doing this album, like, late June, and I bought a ticket, like, right away, because I think they announced it, and the tickets went on sale, like, the next day, and then, like, a week or two later, so it would have been the first week of July, so it's really recent.
So it's, like, that's still super canceled. Recent.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's terrible.
Yeah.
I hope he makes a recovery, because that's, damn.
Yeah, although, like, Bruce Dickinson from Iron Maiden, he was diagnosed with throat cancer, and then I guess he ended up beating it, and they've recorded a new album, and they're still, like, touring now, so.
Oh, that's cool.
So hopefully,
You mentioned Iron Maiden. I don't know how familiar you are with South Florida, but I live in a small town named Coconut Creek. Most famously, I'm like 10 minutes away from that high school where the shooting happened. Mm-hmm. I'm very close to that high school. But I'm about 5 minutes away from Nico. Is that his name?
Oh, the drummer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure how you pronounce it either. Because it's like Nico or Nico
something. Nico, whatever it is. He has a restaurant that's literally 5 minutes away from where I live called Rock and Roll Ribs.
Oh, cool.
So if you're ever in the South Florida area, I think that'd be a place you'd enjoy because you walk in there and it's like walking into an Iron Maiden museum.
Cool.
And the ribs are really good. I feel like barbecue, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And you can get all the Iron Maiden beer. They have all of them there.
Yeah.
So you can drink that too. So and just any Iron Maiden fans, if you're in the South Florida area, Rock and Roll Ribs, check it out. And he comes in there like once a week too. I haven't seen him, but I've only been there a few times. It's pretty expensive, but it's a fun place.
to check out once in a while.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah. Hmm. So the next album I'm going to be talking about, more mainstream punk, probably the most famous of the punk bands to come around, Green Day, with their album called Dookie. I'm sure a lot of people, this is probably the first CD the Weezer album and Woodstock 94 were the first three CDs I bought. This album had Basket Case. There's a whole lot of singles. Basket Case, When I Come Around, Longview, Welcome to Paradise, and She. I'm pretty sure most people are familiar with Dookie as an album. Mm-hmm. If you're not, like some of the other songs that are really good, FOD, which stands off for Fuck Off and Die. It's probably my favorite track on the album. And this album sold 20 million copies worldwide.
Holy cow.
So when you think about it, it's even funnier to think about that, 10 years after this album came out, that probably their biggest album, American Idiot, is even bigger than this. So they are still around. They still tour. They're still super popular.
So they
that's
sold
a lot of longevity. What's up?
Oh, sorry. I guess I was just thinking because you said the amount that they sold was like more than Offspring and Nine Inch Nails combined. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. This album was huge. And if you've never I play some video games, not many. One of the games that I play regularly is Rock Band. I don't know if you've ever played it.
Yeah.
It's so fun. And there's actually a Green Day Rock Band game, just Green Day. And it covers three like stages of their life. Like the current album at the time the game came out was like 21st Century Breakdown.
Yeah.
Then the middle portion covered like everything from Dookie to then, but the very first portion of the game you play Dookie in its entirety, and it's so much fun. Oh, it is so much fun if you like Green Day. It's a really fun game if you like Rock Band at all. Highly recommend Green Day Rock Band. I haven't got to play it in years because it's a PS3 and I have a PS4 now, but looking forward to playing it soon. Gotta hook that back up. But yeah, Dookie, it's such a seminal punk album. A lot of people look, oh, they're sellouts now. No, they're the same band they were. They're just popular now. That's really what that was. They never changed. They're still who they are. I mean, they probably changed now with age, but back then, it was still the same band that did Kerplunk,
Do you buy much vinyl at all, or do you just go digital?
Nowadays it's mostly digital. I don't have a vinyl player, but I do have some albums on vinyl.
Yeah, because I think
just to own.
This year on like Record Store Day, it went fast at the store that I was at, but they put out on vinyl their like Woodstock performance.
Oh, really?
And it was the Dookie cover or something, but then it just looked like a piece of like duct tape. And it said Woodstock over Dookie.
Interesting. I see. I think I should look on eBay for that. I would say like five albums on vinyl. Because I was just going to I don't have a record player, but I was going to line my room.
Yeah.
With vinyl. And one of the ones I have on vinyl is actually the Downward Spiral.
No, cool.
So what do you want to talk about next?
I guess my next one it's kind of a cheat, actually. So it probably should have been an honorable mention, but because it's not an actual full album from a band, it's like a compilation, so that's why it's a cheat. But to me, it's like one of the albums I listen to the most. It's the Crow soundtrack.
See, that to me, that's not a cheat at all. It's a brilliant, brilliant album, brilliant soundtrack.
Yeah,
and I don't blame you for having it on it. Listen, if we were doing a 1995 project, the Empire Records soundtrack would probably be on my list too. So don't feel it's a cheat. It's a brilliant album. It's one of the best albums that came out that year.
Yeah, because it kind of ties in really to some of our other picks because you mentioned Nine Inch Nails and it's got a song that they did, Dead Souls, on there.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, and you said that's on like a deluxe version of
the the edition of Downward Spiral that's currently on Spotify. It's the deluxe edition, and it has Dead Souls on that.
Yeah, which we of just found out earlier was like actually a cover.
Yeah, Joy Division, which is a band I was told to look into recently because I've been diving into Depeche Mode and a lot of 80s kind of stuff, New Order. So I was told that I should listen to Joy Division, so I'm going to be jumping into them in the next few weeks.
Yeah, the reason why like I like the Crow soundtrack so much is it's kind of like, I don't want to say gateway drug, but it was kind of this, almost like that. It was like a way for me to get into other bands. Like it was the first time I really heard like Rage Against the Machine. And then also The Cure. Like I had I guess I'd probably heard some of the songs before on the radio, like the hits, but I never really knew who they were until I listened to this album. And their song Burn starts off the soundtrack, and I was like so hesitant to even listen to any of their other stuff because I felt like I loved that song so much that maybe the other stuff wouldn't like stack up out of that song. But
that makes sense. And like not only that, I'm such a huge fan of the movie too. It's probably my top 10 like of all time. It's such a travesty what happened with Brandon Lee. Anyway, where they use that Cure song in the movie, it is utterly brilliant, and it's such a powerful scene, and the song matches perfectly with like I love that Nine Inch Nails song. It's probably my favorite Nine Inch Nails song, and as good as that song is, I don't think it touches how good that Cure song is.
Yeah. Oh, and I actually got to hear that song live too, because
I'm so jealous.
I saw The Cure. I think it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that tour, and it sold out. They played two shows down here, and they both sold out, and I wasn't able to go.
Yeah, because I think they did two in Chicago. The first one sold out right away, and I barely got in on the second night. But it was insane. Like they did like a full set. Then they came back and they did like four encores, which almost it's like they could have just done like that as one long set. I don't know. It was weird. It was like they left the stage, came back and did one more song, left the stage and came back and did one more song. And like Burn was in, I think, their second or third encore.
Oh, man. Yeah, I remember looking at the set list for the shows that they did down here. And I was just like, oh, I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous. I wasn't able to go because, again, that's one of those bands that it's just they're so seminal to music, and like a lot of people may not even realize it how important they are. They have so many popular songs. But we're talking about The Cure. Let's talk about the soundtrack.
There's another one on there. Like I guess maybe they were big at the time because I kind of got into this. I actually got the Crow soundtrack about the time where the sequel came out, that City of Angels.
A little bit behind. The soundtrack was much better than the movie, right?
Yeah. but I don't know if Helmet was really on the radio that much, but like that's one band too that I'm like, I don't know who Helmet is, but they're pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. I think the singer from Helmet is a big producer now.
Yeah, like Paige Hamilton.
Paige, yeah, that's right. That's right. I know he's done a lot of producing for people.
I probably should have looked this up, but I just thought of this right now off the top of my head. But there was some CD that I got. It might have been 93 or 94, but it was something like Saturday Morning Cartoons Greatest Hits, and it had all those alternative bands. And they were doing like basically like cartoon songs from the 70s and 60s, like Speed Racer and the old Spider-Man, but it had like I think the Ramones did the Spider-Man song, and like Sponge was on there, but I think Helmet had a song on there too. I think they did like Gigantor. Sponge. Yeah,
interesting. That's funny. Actually, I'm actually on Helmet's Wikipedia page right now. My favorite band, their current guitar player, his name is Chris Traynor. He used to be in Helmet for a while in the late 90s to early 2000s.
Oh, yeah. I want to say I think I remember seeing that.
Yeah. He's really good. He's actually been a part of Bush for He's been doing music with Gavin Rossdell since 2001, so he's been around there for a while. Oh, but anyway, yeah, Helmet. Yeah. What was that song they had? I can't think. There's one song they had that was really popular on the radio.
Oh, it was probably from like Mean Time. Was it Unsung?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That would be the one. That was good. That was good stuff.
Yeah, then they were probably like a one-hit wonder, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, it actually came out before the Crow soundtrack. Looking at it here. Of course, the Crow soundtrack has the Stiletto Pilot song, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was huge.
Oh! Another one we haven't mentioned either was pretty good, like Violent Femmes. Like, I've never really gotten into them too much, but that song, it's like all the songs are really dark on this album. And I know they did stuff like Blister in the Sun, where it's like real poppy, but then the one on here is like, it's like really dark and kind of almost like...
I think the Violent Femmes are one of those bands that get very, very overlooked as far as, you know, their significance in what they've done with the music. I feel like they were just eliminated in the greatest song of the 80s tournament, a song I love. Upset me a bit that they got eliminated. I'm kind of make sure it was them, though. Okay, no, I was wrong. But yeah, no, Blister in the Sun is a great, great song.
Oh, was it Added Up?
Maybe. It may have even been Blistered in the Sun. Mm-hmm. I think it lost to Tainted Love. Huh. Anyway, we're going off on random tangents.
The Helmet tangent and now the Fems tangent.
It's the Crow tangent, the Kierke tangent at first. But yeah, it's such a great soundtrack.
Yeah.
With so many important artists. Who's the band? Was it the band that appeared in the movie on the soundtrack too?
I think so.
I forgot who it was. But you know what I'm talking about, that scene. They pan up from the live show and they go up. That's where I think Brandon Lee actually got shot in that scene. When everyone's shooting at him on the table.
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to remember what band.
It was a... Yeah, I don't remember. That's such a... That was definitely one of the soundtracks I owned as a kid. I love that movie so much, and I want to watch it again.
All right, well...
That sequel was terrible. God, that sequel was terrible.
Yeah, but I do like the soundtrack of that, because I think that's got Bush on it too, right?
Yeah, no, that song is not so good. But the Filter song is great. The whole song was great. It was a remix Bush song. I hated it. Let's not talk about that.
Oh, yeah, there was one thing. Like, you go to Comic Cons a lot.
Yeah.
The first one I went to, I think it was like 10 years ago. It was like a horror movie con.
Okay.
And I was going to meet Lance Henriksen. And my girlfriend at the time, she really wanted to meet Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger. And Tony Todd was there. And I was like, sure. Yeah. Sure, I'll go meet him, because I knew him from Candyman. And he was in like an X-Files episode. And he was
Final
in like
Destination.
He was in all that stuff. And then on his banner was a big like Crow logo. Yep. And I was like, because I think it was one of those things where I was just thinking out loud, because I wasn't really like, I think I had just walk up to him at the time. Because I was next in line. I was like, holy shit, you're in the Crow.
Yeah, it's one of those things. That's pretty funny. I got him to sign my Blu-ray. And there was another convention I went to a few years earlier that the creator of the Crow comic book was there.
Oh yeah, he's been doing a lot of those. That James
Obar. Yeah. He signed my Blu-ray too. He talked about how much he loved that first film and working on it, and how much he hated everything that came out after.
Yeah.
Because even like as bad as that second movie was, they've released two more after that were even worse.
Yeah, the Edward Furlong one, I think.
Yeah, there's one with David Boreanaz. Yeah. And the TV show was okay.
Oh, I forgot about that. I remember that.
The TV show was okay. It was only like a special, like, you know, I think there's only like 6 episodes.
Yeah, it was like back when they were doing like what, the syndicated stuff still.
Yeah. It was like a mini series, but it was actually really good. Everything else is garbage. But you know what they say, can't rain all the time. God, I love that fucking movie. Was there anything else you wanted to mention about the Crow soundtrack?
There's like too much to mention. Just that
I know.
Yeah, it's just so good. Like, I really didn't mention the second half of the album, really. But
yeah, there's so many things to mention. There's so many. Just the amount of talent that was on that soundtrack. And, you know, when you think about it, like, the movie didn't even really do that well. But it's so good. And Pantera.
Yeah, which we were talking about that off-air before we started recording. Yeah, but the Pantera song was a cover. And Rollins Band was a cover. But, yeah, there's just a lot of covers on there. But it's not like throwaway tracks. They're all really good.
Yeah, they're all so good. Yeah, I think that's where I got introduced to Rage Against the Machine too, was that with the Crow soundtrack as well. It's crazy to think about. Yeah, I didn't know who I don't think I knew who the Cure was yet.
Yeah.
I knew who Nine Inch Nails was and Stone Temple Pilots were, but it introduced me to so many different artists. It's like, didn't you refer to it as the gateway drug?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true. So true. And now I'm definitely going to watch this movie at some point today.
So then, what is your fourth one?
So my fourth one, doing research for this, doing research trying to figure out what I wanted to put on this list, I completely forgot about this album. And, I mean, I didn't forget about the album, but what I did forget about is how good this album really is. And it's Weezer with their debut, the Blue Album. It's self-titled, but everyone calls it the Blue Album. Everyone knows what Buddy Holly is. That's probably their most famous song, maybe? Unless we're counting their cover of Africa. Undone, the Sweater Song, is a really good song. Say It Ain't So, another Weezer gem. So, I don't know, do you watch Saturday Night Live at all?
Yeah, are you Ride or Die Weezer?
I'm more of the Leslie Jones camp of that, where like everything after Pinkerton was kind of like, okay, sure.
I'm kind album. Of more like Matt Damon, but not where I'm like, what song did he say? He said, like, I forget what song he goes, but that one's better than. This one.
Was it Pork and Beans, maybe?
Yeah.
Because that's a good song, too, but I'm not like... my favorite Weezer album's definitely the Blue one. I can't compare anything to it. I think it's the perfect alternative pop-punk album. Period. It's brilliant. Like, every track, there's not a weak song on the album. My favorite song, when I was, you know, listening to the words nowadays, it's kind of misogynistic, and it reminds me of, like, you know, like a Me Too kind of thing. But it's still a fun song. The song called No One Else.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the words, it's kind of like, okay, Rivers, let's... all right, it's 1994, so I'll cut you some slack here, but not so good to listen to in 2019. But it's still a really fun song. My Name Is Jonas is awesome. What was the other one I was thinking of? Surf Wax America. I think you mentioned one too.
Only in Dreams. Dracula.
Yes, that's a great one too. The whole album's pretty spotless and brilliant. And Buddy Holly, the music video is one of the most iconic 1990s music videos ever. Take on a Happy Days. I'm assuming you've seen it.
I didn't see that until like the mid 2000s because there were some, MTV doesn't show videos anymore, but there was some other MTV like sub channel, And I think it might have been
like MTV Classics.
No, it was something that doesn't even exist anymore either. I think it was like MTVX or something, which is how I found out about a bunch of groups like Danzig, which kind of was, I was flirting with putting that on my list. But they showed that on there, and I was just like, I had never really seen, I think at the time the only Weezer video I'd seen was Hash Pipe, you know, with the sumo wrestling stuff.
Yep.
But the Buddy Holly one, just like, I was like hysterically laughing the whole time because like I like so when good. He like winks at the girls and stuff.
how they put that video together? It looked like they were filming a performance in the set of Happy Days.
Yeah,
it's brilliant. He had the Fonz doing that dance. It's such a fun album. Like I'm so happy I rediscovered it because now it's gonna like re-enter like my rotation of music I listen to all the time now. I love this album. Outside of the next one on my list, it's my favorite one that I've talked about so far. It's so weird to think because I'm not like really into Weezer, but this album is brilliant. So what do you have next on your list, sir?
Oh, another one on. I don't know if you mentioned it. But on that album,
what's up?
The World Has Turned and Left Me Here.
Oh, yeah.
Another one. Because it's like, working in radio, like I hear those singles from that album all the time. And it's kind of almost ruined bands for me because some of my friends would give me shit. Like, does your boss know that Weezer had more than one album or Pearl Jam had more than one album? Because it seems like he's so like stuck on playing those like hits from those albums.
Yeah.
So then it's like I've got to a point where I was kind of tired of the Blue album, but then I went back and listened to it, and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even like know that there was like these other songs. And yet Only in Dreams is like, I think it's like 8 minutes long or something. But it's not really artsy, but it kind of has that kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
So,
you know, and when you're listening to it, it doesn't feel like it. You know, you don't feel the length. Like when I know a lot of people, this may sound blasphemous to a lot of rock music fans, I don't like Tool. I find them to be super pretentious. And every song, it's like a song will come on, I'll be like, nope, I'll change the station. I'll hear two songs on another station. I'll turn it back to the other station. And that same Tool song is still on. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, okay, let's, no, thank you. Nope.
I know what you feel because, like in high school, I used to be big into Tool, which was kind of like, I guess, another like gateway for me because I was so into Tool that one of my friends is like, hey, if you like Tool, you might like Dream Theater. And so that would kind of led me to that group. And I got to a point where like, yeah, I think I got kind of pretentious where I'm like, okay, I'm only going to listen to these artsy, long songs. I'm not really... I'm going to listen to these like short ones anymore. But then something shifted back where I'm like, man, not everything's got to be like have some super like meaning and depth. I mean, like what's wrong with, like Buddy Holly. It's a short little fun song. Everything's got to be long and have that kind of, you know, depth to it. You know, there's like a song for everything. So, I kind of get what you mean with Tool. Cause now I'm like, man, that, the name of the band is so like spot on because they seem like a bunch of Tools to me. You know, it takes them like 15 years now to come up with an album.
I know, and it's crazy because I like it's funny. I like his voice, but like I'm like no to Tool, but I'm like a perfect circle. Bring it. I'm okay.
Yeah.
hit me with that Judith. But Tool, I'm like nah, I'm all right, guys.
Yeah.
I don't need it. And I'm like, for me, you're talking about, you know, the long, super deep. I'm like, as long as the song has you know, legible lyrics, a good hook, you know, clear vocals, smooth vocals, and it's not super repetitive, it has potential to be a good song.
Yeah.
That's why, like, you know, a lot of this punk stuff is kind of resonates with me. Because, you know, like Buddy Holly is a perfect example of a, just a fun, catchy pop song that you know you can bop to, you know. Ooh, I look just like Buddy Holly. Such a great song. So what's the last one for you, sir?
All right, my last one. This would be. It is in my top 10 of all time, and it depends my mood. That it might be in my top 5. Actually, it's just one of those albums too. It's got kind of something that fits like my mood. Like there's like some rock songs, and then there's some like maybe like deeper like songs. And even we've talked about an album that it kind of like crossed over with my last pick. My favorite album of 1994 is Stone Temple Pilots' Purple, which was their second album.
Ah, so good.
And it had Big Empty was on the Crow soundtrack, which was kind of my gateway into Stone Temple Pilots.
Were you ever able to see them?
Not with Scott, no, but I saw them with Chester, and then I saw them just last year with the new guy, Jeff Goot.
Okay.
And I was really digging that show. Like, I kind of thought, man, he's just going to be a sound alike. And it was still really good because I like the songs maybe. So I guess I was just in the moment and I'm like, this is a fun show.
Mm.
And then even Chester, like, I know he got a lot of flack, but I think it was one of those things how we were talking with bands, talking about bands doing maybe deeper cuts.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like with Chester, they like I can't think of the song or two off the top of my head right now, but I know that they did one or two songs that I think they didn't really do with Scott on the last couple tours. Because one of my friends, he saw him with Scott, I think in like 2008, yeah. And then in 2010 on those tours when they got back with him, and they just stuck to all the hits.
Interesting.
And I think we were looking at the setlist website, and we kind of confirmed what we were thinking that yeah, there's like something with Chester that. Maybe they didn't do, and there's one that like, it's not the same as Purple, but there's one that I like, Art School Girlfriend, and there was some show where I was shouting out, play Art School Girlfriend, and like, Rob looked at me and like laughed.
That's funny.
But yeah, with Purple, there's like Army Ants, that's really good, and like Vaseline, so you got those.
Oh,
like,
Vaseline, of course.
Hard rock songs. Then you got the hit.
I love Unglued.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's a good song.
What is it? Pretty Penny's pretty good.
Yep.
And then, obviously, Big Empty.
Yep. I think you're forgetting. I think the biggest one was Interstate Love Song, was it not?
Yeah, because... Or I guess I was going to say that. You got that, that's the hit song. Then you've got those hard rock songs. Then you got kind of the longer, kind of moody one, Big Empty. So it's kind of touches on everything. But then what's cool is it's a completely different from their first album, Core. It's the same band, but they're like two different sounds.
Yep. The first, like I went to two concerts before. But like the first like big concert I went to, like a huge venue, was actually seeing Stone Temple Pilots in 1996.
Oh, so you did see him with Scott?
Yes. Twice I've seen him with Scott. Once in 96 and again in 2000. The performance in 2000 was a lot better because when I saw them in 1996, I mean, I hate to speak ill of the deceased, but how he survived as long as he did is kind of astonishing. Because he was a fucking train wreck at this concert. Couldn't understand a word he was saying. He couldn't remember the lyrics to his own song. It was kind of embarrassing how just not good they were. But when I saw them in 2000, he was spot on. He was great. So I guess he was just a little too strung out when I saw them in 96. But I guess that's expected of Scott Weiland in the mid-90s to be that way.
It seemed like every other album or every tour, wasn't it? Like he would be like deep into that, and then he'd clean up and get sober, and then the next album it would be like back. Like
I remember, I want to say it was the late 90s where the rest of the band just got sick of his shit after Tiny Music.
Yeah.
Or didn't they fire him?
Yeah, because they did some other album, Talk Show. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they brought him back in the late 90s again to, because I guess Talk Show didn't take off like they wanted to. But I can understand why. Excuse me. I can understand why they would get sick of them, because, like I said, when I saw them at this concert in 96, it's like... So you're a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Oh, do you remember when TNA sent Jeff Hardy out there when he was
for a main event of a pay-per-view? Was that the Sting thing where they didn't even wrestle? It was like a...
Yes. Where Jeff Hardy just walked around the ring stumbling, like throwing his shirt into the crowd, jaw-jacking.
Yeah.
And Sting just like forced a pin on him in like seconds. That's what the Scott Weiland performance was like when I saw them in 96. It's like, why would you let this guy go out there on stage? Yeah. Like, but like I said, like I can't believe he like survived as long as he did, because he was a massive train wreck. A massive train wreck.
But then listen to those albums. That, he sounds so good. It's like, God dang, that guy was awesome.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of like Layne Staley, you know? How awesome he is live and his tragic end. So I don't know if you've seen Alice in Chains with their new singer.
Yes. I saw them so this good. Year. That William Duvall.
Yeah, I don't know his name, but I think I saw them with their first tour with him.
Oh.
Like in 2006.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, so good. I was like blown away, like instantly. Like, this guy's amazing. I may even be going to... Did you see them with their tour with Korn?
No. They came to Peoria. I think it was like randomly. They were doing like a Canada tour. And I think this was in the spring.
I'm a friend of mine is trying to convince me to go to the Alice in Chains Korn tour at the end of this month. Thinking about it. I don't know.
Which, that's another one that I thought about putting on the list too. Korn's first album in 94.
Yeah. When I saw that they came out with something in 94, I couldn't believe that they've been around this long. Like, I thought they were like 97. Because I think that's when they came into my head with like Adidas.
Oh, see, I was later. I was more of the MTV, the Follow the Leader.
Mm. Well, remember, I'm a little bit older.
Yeah.
So like I started seeing people wear Korn shirts in 96, 97. I actually went to Lollapalooza in 97.
Oh, awesome.
The last year of their like touring. Until like the early 2000s when they came back, and I think Korn was there. I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure Korn was there. And it was before I like even really knew who they were. That Lollapalooza was terrible. It was really bad. It wasn't when I say Lollapalooza and you say awesome. It's not the years of Soundgarden and Nine Inch Nails Lollapalooza that I went to that other people went to. It was like, yeah, we're trying to hold on, guys. Please come. You ready to hit this lineup for oh my god, it's so bad. For Lollapalooza 94-7.
Hit me.
So I'm gonna read the side stage first. Which is actually looking better than the main stage, if you want my opinion. Failure. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're rather good.
Yeah.
Beck. The Eels, this band called Summer Camp, Artificial Joy Club, Radish, Old 97s, Carnival for Pyros? I don't remember that, but sure.
Oh, wasn't that Perry Farrell after James Addiction?
Yeah, I don't like that guy. I don't like his voice. I don't like anything about him. But all right, so here's the main stage. Orbital. Devo.
What?
The Prodigy. The Orb, Snoop Doggy Dog, Tricky, Korn, Julian Marley and Damian Marley, G Love and Special Sauce, James, like what?
That was all the main stage?
That was the main stage.
Yeah, I think I like the earlier list better.
So here's the main stage in 1996, just to give you an example.
Is that the one they spoofed on Simpsons with, like, Smashing Pumpkins and stuff?
Maybe. That was a long time ago. The main stage for 1996 read like this. Metallica, Soundgarden, The Ramones, Rancid, Rage Against the Machine, Violent Femmes, Wu-Tang Clan, 311. I mean, that's a little better.
Damn, that's like a who's who kind of still, because you got, like, Soundgarden.
Metallica. Think,
yeah.
And Rancid, then The Ramones.
G-Love and Special Sauce.
Yeah. Tricky. Sure. So like I said, that was like the waning, please come. Yeah. Please come to the show, please. Now, even like the side stage in 96, Ben Folds 5, Soul Coughing, Sponge, that's some good stuff right there.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, enough of my fucking Lollapalooza 97 bullshit rant.
Yeah, that...
God, that was terrible.
That sounds like kind of a... There's a... It's kind of like they call it drug camp. But there's like a show every Memorial Day weekend here outside of Peoria that's called Summer Camp. And it's kind of all those jam bands, but it's basically like people just getting, like, you'll see people pulled off on the side of the road for like a drug bust and stuff.
Jesus. But
they always have like really weird like jam bands that like I'm not into, but then they'll have like a big headliner. And one year, the only year I went, they had Jane's Addiction on like...
Okay.
As the big headliner in like 2011 or 12.
Mm-hmm.
But then that sounds like the list that you're reading off for like 97 sounds like stuff you would see at summer camp. Like, because that G-Love and Special Sauce. Like, I didn't even know they'd be around back in 97, like 20 years ago. I thought it was just some weird band that was, they got for summer camp.
Yeah, I remember The Prodigy, but I don't think I knew who they were yet. Yeah.
Because
they got big a little later.
Yeah,
that guy just died too.
I guess to give you an idea, that summer camp, it's like Fish and Mo and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, I got you. I yeah, that's not really my kind of cup of tea either myself.
But man, 96 sounds really good.
Yeah, and then I don't know what happened.
Your number one then.
I'm sure everyone on the planet who knows me knows what my number one is. It's going to be 16 Stone from my favorite band on the world, Bush. So technically, yes, this album came out in 1994, but they didn't release any singles until 95. So a lot of people were probably very unaware of who they were in 94. I mean, what is there to say? Five huge alternative rock songs on this album. Everything's Zen, Little Things, Come Down, Machine Head, and Glycerine. I first heard them seeing a video for Come Down, and I like instantly fell in love with this band. I immediately went out and bought the album, and it's still... I've actually, over the years, had to buy maybe four different copies of the CD for how many times I played it, and it got scratched and unlistenable for a while. But it is such a fantastic, fantastic alternative album. Very successful, 10 million copies sold worldwide. And if you've never seen them, I highly recommend going to this tour this summer. Gavin Rossdale's like a fine wine. He's only gotten so much better with age, and they put on a fucking hell of a show, if you don't mind my language. And if you've never seen them, definitely check out this show. It's going to be great with Live and Our Lady Peace. It's well worth the $30-$40, whatever the price to it for admission is. Have you... you've never seen them, have you?
No. I have seen Bush.
Oh, you have
seen them. It was kind of like 2013, I think. I'm like,
okay.
It's kind of the same thing where the radio almost kind of killed Bush for me a little bit, because
Yeah,
all the singles, like five of them from that album,
yep.
And it was going to be Shinedown and Bush, and they were playing not in Peoria, but like outside of Peoria. And I really like Shinedown. Like, I don't like them as much now, but I was like, maybe the two albums, like, what is it, Sound of Madness and the one that after that, I was like super into Shinedown, and I really wanted to go for that. And I'm like, all right, I'll try to go for Bush. But one of my friends, he like tagged along with me. He was going for Bush. And then he's like, so we were kind of the opposite, going for one band. And he was kind of like, all right, I guess I'll see the other one.
Yeah.
And I think Bush blew them away. They totally owned, wiped the stage with Shinedown.
Interesting.
And what was so cool was, I think he's probably does it all the time. You would know because you've seen
Bush.
Yeah, I see
them a thousand times. So
they were doing like Come Together, and he got down off the, Gavin got down off the stage and went all the way around the arena while they were doing that song. And I thought that was so cool. And then it was like another thing where, like I knew that Bush had a lot of songs, but then it was one of those things during the show where I was like, had some kind of revelation where I'm like, all those songs were from that album?
All five, yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. And it's funny, it's not even my favorite album of theirs. But yeah, five huge hits on that one album, yeah?
Yeah, I think they blew Shinedown off the stage, which
they're so good live.
Yeah.
Like, so I first saw them in 97, and I was kind of disappointed with the sound. It could have been the arena, because they were still like massive and selling out like huge arenas then. But I don't think, I think like seriously, as I've seen them as the years have gone on, they've only gotten better with each performance, which is bizarre. Usually they get worse. But he's so one of the last times I saw them, it was at this venue down here called the Fillmore, which is like a mid-range, like not like a tiny club, but not like a huge arena.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those like...
Those are like the best like, shows, I think. Those kind of mid-level theater shows almost.
So there's like a... It's like a fancy theater. So like there's the floor and then there's like an orchestra above that overhangs. Like a mezzanine, I think you're called?
Yeah.
So Gavin Rossdale got off stage during Little Things. He was walking along the banister above us, and he was sitting there singing Little Things as he's walking across his banister. Like, this guy can fucking fall on us and die.
Oh, shit.
Fucking crazy, out of his mind. He's like, yeah, he's like fucking 50 years old now. He shouldn't be doing that shit.
The one thing I think, too, that's cool about seeing them live is like just watching him on stage, he looks like he's not walking, he just floats.
Yep,
he like slides from side to side, and I don't know what he does with his feet, but he looks like he's like sliding.
It's crazy. He's so good.
Yeah.
Not to go off on another tangent, have you heard their new song by chance?
If they've got something from this year, no, but I know they came to Peoria again last spring, so like a little over a year ago, and I kind of liked, I think they did a couple songs that were new, and they fit, like I didn't listen to the album, but the new songs, they fit in really well with the old songs.
Yeah. No, they released a song this year, because they have a new album coming out in October, I think. But the song, it was in for the John Wick 3 movie.
Oh, okay, no, I haven't heard it then.
It's probably the heaviest stuff they've done.
Huh.
I really enjoy it.
Yeah. I'd like to hear that then.
Yeah, it's I saw him do an interview with K-Rock saying how this upcoming album is like the heaviest stuff they've ever done. So I'm really looking forward to that, because the last album was more I don't know. I mean, I didn't love it. There was a lot of good tracks on it, but like overall, it was like the first like post Gwen album. Mm. So there's a lot of like, you know, meh kind of stuff on it. But this new song's fantastic. So I'll send you a link to it.
Oh, okay. So I don't really like going to Wikipedia and stuff during, okay, like during podcasts, but I wanted to pull up Bush's page because I don't.
Okay.
I like kind of going off the top of my head instead of like looking at stuff.
Yeah.
But this thing like on Wikipedia, it says Rosdale claimed in late May that the new album featuring songwriting from Tyler Bates. All right, I am sold because I'm not a huge Marilyn Manson fan, but his last like two albums he wrote with that Tyler Bates, and the music is really good. It is. It's kind of like a darker kind of like. He's done like score music scores like Tyler Bates. He did the music for the Guardians of the Galaxy, like not you know, like the 70s songs, but yeah, the score. And he's done a lot of other scores, so that was kind of what interested me in like checking out those Manson albums because he kind of fell off my radar. But I liked the music at least. I think it's like I can't even, it's like escaping me right now, but it was something, the Pale Emperor or something was the Marilyn Manson album he did. And there's some stuff on there that it just sounds really dark and twisted and kind of cool.
I see. I never heard that name. So now I'm intrigued.
So I'm sold on the new Bush album. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I'll check that out.
Yeah. They for this tour with live, they're only doing like those 5-16 Stone songs, a couple other singles off other albums, and the new one. So they're not doing like other stuff off this new album, but I anticipate them doing another tour in the fall in support of this new album, which I'll be listening to like the day it comes out, of obviously.
Because this is more like a nostalgia tour, I guess.
Yeah, I was thinking they were both gonna be playing, like Bush would be playing 16 Stone in full and Live would have been playing Throwing Copper in full, but that's definitely not the case. I thought that would have made more sense. But going back to 16 Stone real quick, the best like non-single track that probably should have been a single because it's such a great song, it's called Alien. And if you get the chance to listen to the album, it's actually the song right after Glycerine. Give it a listen because it's a beautiful, beautiful song. They probably didn't release it because it's kind of similar to Glycerine. But Glycerine's such a huge, huge single. Probably their most famous song.
Yeah,
I would think that maybe Machine Head.
Yeah, see, I thought Machine Head would be, but maybe that's just because that's the one that gets played on the radio the most around here.
You think so? Oh, maybe up there, because I thought like I would rank them like Glycerine, then Come Down, then Machine Head as popularity. And I only say Machine Head because of, you know, if you ever go to any sporting event like ever in your life,
yeah,
that song is always played at every sporting event I've ever been to.
Yeah, I'd probably
I'll be watching the Patriots on TV, and I'll hear Machine Head being played at the loudspeaker of the stadium. Like every sporting event I've ever been to, the Machine Head's been played.
Yeah, it's kind of like
Jump. Oh, and also the movie Fear. Have you seen the movie Fear?
Yeah, with Marky Mark.
Yeah, that Bush has played all over that movie, and it's another reason I love it. Anyway, 16 Stone, my favorite album in 1994. And it's in my top five of all time, too. So,
yeah, so it's kind of like me with a Stone Temple Pilots, but not, like, that's not my favorite band, though.
Bush, my favorite band. Out of the top five in my all time, like, four of them are Bush albums. So, I'm pretty, pretty biased when it comes to them.
Man, I'm glad we talked, because now I'm like hyped up for that Bush album.
Oh, the new one?
Yeah.
I'll send you the YouTube link for the song when we're done recording. It's really good. Do you have Spotify?
I've got an iPhone, so I use Apple Music. But yeah,
I have an iPhone too, but Spotify, it's $9.99 a month. Yeah, Apple Music's $9.99 too, right?
Yeah.
Well, Spotify, $9.99 a month, and it comes with Hulu for free.
Oh.
So that's why I do Spotify.
Anyway. Oh, well, maybe you just sold me on something else then.
I mean, it's the same thing. It has everything. You just pull up whatever. I used Apple Music until like I saw the Spotify $9.99 a month for, and it comes with Hulu for free. I'm like, okay, that works. I'm sold. But this has been fun.
Yeah.
A good look back at 1994 in rock. Crazy year. Woodstock. Bunch of awesome albums. lot of nostalgia, a lot of memories.
Yeah, it really is, because there's even stuff that like I didn't really touch on, because like you know, we could probably do like a 10-hour podcast or something.
It's crazy
with all this stuff on here.
Did you happen to listen to the songs of Friends that Stephen Kelly did on 1994?
No, I've been kind of behind because I've been going back through our stuff. I just wanted like a refresher on our albums, and there's other stuff that I've bought recently that I've listened to. So I'm like behind on podcasts right now.
No, I'm super behind because I just actually got new headphones, so I'll be able to start listening again. But I did happen to check that one out because they covered one of my favorite songs from 1994, the Lisa Loeb gem "Stay."
Oh, nice.
I think she's Hachimachi, as they say in Place to Be Nation. and that's such a great song. And, of course, the Warren G gem, Regulate, that was a fun, too. So if you haven't checked that podcast out, check that out. And, of course, once Mr. Steve Bennett's look at the grunge albums from Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, and Soundgarden comes out, check that one out as well. And continue checking the website for all the 1994 your mind, body, and soul can take. And I will actually personally be doing a written piece, a more extensive deep dive look at the 16th Stone album. And I'm also planning on doing a written piece on the wonderful television show named Boy Meets World at some point. So keep your eyes open for that. Do you have anything else coming up?
I don't. I'm like kind of on the fringe of place to be. Like, I'm just kind of like a lurker. but I've been helping out with David Sunday. I've been producing his show when he does
that.
Oh,
that's cool.
So
I've been on a few of those. Love Mr. Sunday.
Yeah.
Good fellow.
Yeah, like I'm waiting to groove again. Cause I think, like, I don't know if he's got anything in the works yet.
But I keep trying to get him to do a Bush episode with me. He's very hesitant.
I think there's a lot of stuff that he wants to do, but I think like we're in the same kind of mindset where we don't want to do something unless we can kind of fully immerse ourselves into that band.
Completely.
Yeah,
I completely understand that. And as far as my my main podcast, the PTB and E-Ticket Attraction, planning on doing my next episode in 2 months, where we'll be talking about Universal Studios and a comprehensive look at this year's Halloween Horror Nights, along with a special interview for Horror Nights fans. That's something to look forward to in September. Looking forward to doing that, as I love Halloween Horror Nights almost as much as I love Butch.
Oh, cool. That's a good teaser for your upcoming show.
Yeah. That's still a couple months out, but it's going to be fun. But thanks for looking at this 1994 year in rock with me today, Andy. It's been a lot of fun talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for putting this together.
No problem, man. And Place to Be Nation, take care and enjoy 1994.